Welcome back to the Deep Dive. So we're shifting gears today. I mean, we usually talk about these huge macro systems, supply chains, geopolitics, that kind of thing.
Big picture stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But today, we're zooming in, way, way in.
We're going down to the atomic level. We're looking at a structural crisis that has, well, it's been plaguing engineering for 150 years.
It really is the oldest new problem in material science, isn't it? We're talking about hydrogen embrittlement.
We are.
And specifically, we are unpacking a really dense but fascinating PhD thesis by Yunju Song titled Hydrogen Desorption in Steels. And I think we have to start with the vocabulary she uses.
Oh, yeah.
She calls hydrogen a pernicious solute.
Pernicious. That's a heavy word for the smallest, simplest element in the
It
universe.
is. Pernicious implies this, gradual, subtle destructiveness. And that's the really terrifying thing about hydrogen and steel. It's not like rust.
No, you can't see it happening.
You can't. The hydrogen just, it slips between the iron atoms, gets into the lattice, and it just waits. You have no idea it's there until a high-strength bolt just snaps or a pipeline fractures.
And the timing for this discussion is, well, it's critical. We're banking so much on the so-called hydrogen economy.
Right, wanting to pump hydrogen through our existing pipelines.
Exactly. Pumping it through, storing it in high-pressure tanks. If we don't get a handle on this embrittlement problem, that whole economic roadmap is, well, it's basically paved with cracked steel.
And the outline says this was first reported by a guy named Johnson way back in 1874. You'd think after a century and a half of metallurgy, we'd have this solved.
You would think. But Song's thesis argues that we haven't solved it because we haven't really been able to properly measure it.
So the mission today isn't just about the cracking itself, but about her proposal for a new model to actually see what's going on, a numerical finite difference model.
We're finally moving beyond the old trial and error phase of, let's add some alloy and see if it breaks, to actually simulating the atomic behavior.
Okay, so before we get into the simulation, we have to set the stage. How does one tiny proton take down a whole steel structure? I know there are a few competing theories out there.
It's less of a competition and more of a complex overlap. You've basically got three main suspects. The first is the internal pressure theory.
That's the one that's easiest to picture, right?
It's the most intuitive for sure. So atomic hydrogen diffuses into the steel,
Because it's tiny enough to fit.
slips right in. It finds a void, a tiny micro crack, and it meets up with another hydrogen atom. They recombine into H2 gas.
And molecular H2 is way too big to get back out.
It's trapped, so more and more of it accumulates, and the pressure just builds and builds. We're talking massive amounts of pressure until it literally blows the steel apart from the inside out. That's blistering.
Okay, but blistering is something you can often see. The really scary ones are the ones that mess with the atomic bonds themselves, like HDE and HALP.
Right. So HEE is hydrogen-enhanced decohesion. Think of it like this. The hydrogen gets into the iron lattice and just weakens the glue holding the atoms together.
It lowers the energy needed to just pull them apart.
Precisely. It makes the metal easier to cleave. And then you've got HELP.
Hydrogen-enhanced local plasticity. This one always feels counterintuitive. Plasticity sounds like a good thing. You want metal to bend, not snap.
You want global plasticity, yeah. You want the whole part to stretch. HELP causes very localized plasticity.
So just in one tiny spot.
Exactly. The hydrogen clusters around defects called dislocations, and it shields their stress fields, making it easier for them to move.
But only in those specific hydrogen-rich zones.
Right. So you get this intense localized slipping while the rest of the material stays rigid. That mismatch creates a highly localized failure, which on a macro scale looks like a brittle fracture.
So it's a multi-pronged attack. Internal pressure, weaker bonds, localized slipping. To stop it, you have to know where the hydrogen is hiding.
And that brings us to the main tool in this thesis, thermal desorption spectroscopy, or TDS.
It sounds complex, but the idea is pretty simple, right? It's like an interrogation technique.
That's a perfect analogy. You charge your steel sample with hydrogen, stick it in a vacuum furnace, and then you turn up the heat at a very steady, constant rate.
You turn up the heat until the suspect talks.
And just like an interrogation, when they talk, tells you everything. Hydrogen that's just sitting in the normal lattice sites comes out easily at low temperatures.
But the hydrogen that's really dug in deep.
The hydrogen caught in deep traps, like at grain boundaries or dislocations, it needs a lot more energy to escape. It only comes out at much higher temperatures.
So the output is a graph, a curve with peaks. Ideally, one peak for each type of trap. Here's the lattice hydrogen. Here's the dislocation hydrogen.
In a perfect world, yeah. In reality, the raw data is a mess. The peaks all overlap and merge together into this convoluted squiggly line.
And that's the problem. The raw data doesn't tell you much without a mathematical model to decode it.
Exactly. And this is where the older models like Kissinger, McNabb-Foster, and especially the Oriani models start to fall apart.
The Oriani model has been the standard for decades, but the thesis really takes aim at it.
Well, the Oriani model is elegant, but it's built on a huge assumption, local equilibrium. It assumes the hydrogen in the traps and the hydrogen in the lattice are always in perfect instant balance.
Which means it assumes the hydrogen can jump in and out of a trap instantly compared to how long it takes to diffuse through the metal.
It creates the simplified variable called apparent diffusivity. Mm. And look, it works okay for simple cases. One type of trap, slow heating. But modern steels are full of different traps. Carbides, grain boundaries, dislocations, all competing for hydrogen.
And then there's the Kissinger method, which just ignores diffusion altogether.
Completely ignores it. It assumes the only thing that matters is the energy it takes to pop out of the trap. For a thick piece of pipeline steel, that's just, it's not physically realistic.
So Song's argument is that these analytical shortcuts, they just don't work anymore. We need to, brute force it.
That's a good way to put it. Enter the numerical finite difference method.
This is the core innovation. So instead of one clean equation, she just slices the steel up into a digital mesh.
A very fine mesh. The thesis mentions 50 digital elements for ferrite steel, but over 800 for austenite.
Oh, why so many more for austenite?
It's because hydrogen diffuses much, much slower in austenite. So you need a finer mesh to capture those steep concentration gradients. The simulation runs the diffusion laws on every single one of those elements.
At the same time.
While also calculating the kinetics of trapping and detrapping at each point. It's separating two processes that the old models mashed together.
So it's tracking the diffusion through the lattice and the hopping in and out of traps is two separate things.
Two separate simultaneous things. It doesn't assume equilibrium, it calculates it.
Okay, so let's get to the results. What did this new, powerful model actually show? The first case study was on simple ferrite steel.
A fundamental test. They took a piece of ferrite and they stretched it 10% elongation, then another sample at 20%.
And by stretching it, you're physically creating more dislocations. You're adding more defects.
You're adding more traps. And when they ran the TDS test, sure enough, a new peak started to grow on the graph as the strain increased.
A peak that wasn't there before.
And because she was using the new model, she could isolate that peak's binding energy with incredible precision. It came out to exactly 48 kilojoules per mole.
48 kilojoules per mole. The fingerprint of a dislocation trap.
Exactly. And she could clearly distinguish that from the grain boundaries, which the model pinned at 53 kilojoules mole.
That's amazing. Being able to reliably tell the difference between 48 and 53, it's a level of resolution the old models just couldn't give you.
It's a huge deal. It proves that mechanical damage directly increases the steel's capacity to store hydrogen. You're literally building hotels for the enemy.
But the part that really blew my mind was the carbon segregation experiment. It connects directly to how we build cars, the bake hardening process.
Standard practice in automotive manufacturing, you stamp a body panel, you paint it, and then the whole car chassis goes into an oven at about 170 Celsius for 20 minutes to cure the paint.
So the thesis replicated this bake cycle. They stretched the steel, then baked it. And when they tested it afterwards, the steel absorbed way less hydrogen.
A lot less. The trap density dropped by 72%.
72%. So what's happening in that oven?
It's a competition for real estate. When you heat the steel to 170 degrees, the carbon atoms that are dissolved in the iron become mobile. They start to move around.
And where do they go?
They migrate to the most stable energetic sites, which are the dislocations and grain boundaries, the exact same deep traps that hydrogen loves.
So this is the Cottrell atmosphere effect.
That's it. The carbon gets there first, it locks into those defect sites, and it effectively puts a reserve sign on the seat.
It's like someone going to a movie theater early and saving all the best seats for their friends.
It's a perfect analogy. So when the hydrogen comes along later, maybe from road salt corrosion or, you know, a hydrogen fuel source, the most dangerous deep traps are already occupied by carbon.
The hydrogen is forced to stay in the shallow traps or just in the lattice where it can get out easily.
Instead of getting pinned in a high energy site where it can cause a crack, it's a brilliant, almost accidental way of using one solute to block a more dangerous one.
And that's just from a standard paint curing cycle.
Uh-huh.
Amazing. But that was ferrite. The really heavy lifting in this thesis is the work on 2WIP steel.
Twinning-induced plasticity steel, very high manganese content.
This stuff is like the holy grail for car safety. It can absorb incredible amounts of crash energy.
But it has a huge hydrogen problem. It's notoriously susceptible to hydrogen-delayed fracture.
So you could stamp a part from 2WIP steel, you leave it on a shelf, and it might just spontaneously crack open a week later.
Yeah, it's a major issue. And for years, the industry fix has been to just add aluminum to the alloy. For some reason, that stops the delayed fracture.
Which brings us to the paradox. Because when they ran the TDS test on the aluminum alloyed steel, the total amount of hydrogen it absorbed actually went up.
Significantly up.
Okay, wait. So if hydrogen is the bad guy, the pernicious dilute, how is absorbing more of it a good thing? It seems like the walls should fall down even faster.
It's completely counterintuitive. And to solve this, they had to combine the new model with first principles calculations, which is basically looking at the quantum mechanics of the atoms.
So what did they find?
When you substitute an aluminum atom into the iron manganese lattice, the aluminum atom is physically a little bit larger. It doesn't quite fit.
It strains the lattice around it.
It pushes the nearby iron atoms away, expanding the local lattice from 2.445 angstroms to 2.510 angstroms. That little localized expansion creates a potential well, a trap for hydrogen.
But it must be a different kind of trap than a dislocation.
A very different kind. And this is the absolute key to the whole puzzle. The binding energy of this aluminum-induced trap is only 5.8 kilojoule.
5.8. That's nothing. It's tiny compared to the 48 for a dislocation. It's barely a speed bump.
It is a speed bump. A very, very weak trap. But because aluminum is alloyed throughout the entire material, there are billions and billions of these weak traps everywhere.
So if you're a hydrogen atom trying to move through the steel to get to a crack tip,
instead of a clear highway, you're now on a road that's just covered in speed bumps. Every few atoms you move, you hit another one.
You fall into one of these shallow aluminum wells, you vibrate out, you move a tiny bit, and you immediately fall into another one.
You spend all your time just hopping between these safe, shallow traps. The overall movement, the effective diffusivity just plummets.
So there's more hydrogen in the steel overall because all these traps have increased the solubility.
But it's kinetically immobilized. It's stuck in traffic. It can't rush to the tip of a crack to build up that critical concentration needed for fracture.
It's the traffic jam solution. You don't close the road. You just make the traffic so slow that the pileup never happens.
And Song's numerical model confirmed it. The only way they could get their simulation to match the experimental TDS curve for the aluminum steel was to introduce this massive density of very weak traps. The old Oriani model would have choked on that. It just can't handle that level of complexity.
This feels like a huge philosophical shift in how we design materials. Mm. For so long, the goal was purity. Get rid of defects. Get rid of inclusions.
The perfect crystal.
Yeah. But here, we're intentionally adding a defect, the lattice strain from the aluminum, to save the material.
It shifts the entire paradigm from hydrogen exclusion to hydrogen management. We have to accept that in a future hydrogen economy, the gas will get into our steel. We can't stop it at the surface.
So we have to control where it goes once it's inside.
We have to design the trap hierarchy. We engineer the material to make sure the dangerous deep traps are already blocked, maybe by carbon from a bake cycle.
And then you create a dense network of shallow, safe traps with something like aluminum to keep the remaining hydrogen distracted and slow.
We are literally engineering the imperfections to act as a shield.
That is the future of materials design, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not about the perfect material. It's about the perfect arrangement of imperfections.
And for you listening, thinking, why does this matter to me? The next time you get into a modern car, you are surrounded by high-strength steels that use these exact principles to keep you safe while also shaving off weight for better fuel efficiency.
And as we start to roll out hydrogen fuel stations and pipelines, the difference between a safe energy transition and a catastrophic one, it might just come down to whether the engineers calculated that 5.8 kilojoule trap correctly.
It absolutely could.
We're going to leave it there. A huge credit to the work of Yoon-Ju Song for giving us this incredible glimpse into the atomic battleground. And for you listening, just think about that idea of strategic imperfection. Sometimes the flaw is the feature that keeps the whole thing from falling apart.
Until next time.
Thanks for diving in.